So we started the inyonim of Oinoas Dvorim and Gnivas Das, I guess, because those two go together. There are two sugyas that deal with Oinoas Dvorim and Gnivas Das. One sugya is in Bovim Mitzir, the other one is in Chulin. The sugya in Bovim Mitzir and the Chesn Beis deals with Oinoas Dvorim, the sugya in Chulin deals with Gnevas Das. I do not believe that in the course of our short presentation here I will be able to get into the details of the sugi of Gnevas Das, but what I will try to do is that to give you a little bit of an understanding what Oinoas Dvorim and what Gnevas Das is, because this is basically an introduction into the general subject of deceiving. What is considered from Chazal's perspective deception? And there are two different aspects to deception. One is called Oinoas Dvorim and the other one is called Gnevas Das. So we need to know the Gdorim of each of those. So as I said, we here in Bov Mitzir we have the sugi of Oinoas Dvorim. And we need to know what does Oinoas Dvorim mean, what does it exactly stand for. So the Mishnah says as follows. The Mishnah itself has a very interesting language. Keshem she'oino b'mekach u'memkah, as you find Oino, which is deception, b'mekach u'memkah, in regular business, kach Oino b'dvorim. Similarly, there is also a concept of deception b'dvorim. First of all, we need to understand why does the Mishnah altogether have included Oinoas Dvorim, deception, which is not of commercial character, to Oino b'mekach u'memkah, deception of commercial character. But that's what it says in the Mishnah. Keshem. And this is a question which we need to address. So now the Mishnah here gives us three different instances, three different cases. First case is, lo yoyma lo b'kamo chefet ze, person shouldn't enter the store and ask, how much do you want I should pay you for this merchandise? When in fact his intention isn't there altogether to buy it. We don't yet know why would this person ask what the price is if he's not interested to buy. You'll have to discuss it. But that's what it says in the Mishnah. You're not permitted to do so, and if you do so, you are transgressing Oinoas Dvorim. Then the two other cases mentioned in the Mishnah. If the person who had failed in life, like many of us, you should not remind him of his shortcomings. In Ben Gerim, also a person who at one point of time was a Gentile, shouldn't tell him, remember your origins. So we have here three cases in the mission. One is of a commercial character, which is somewhat commercial character. You enter a store and you ask, how much do you want for this merchandise? You do not intend to buy it, then you are over the issue of Oinoas Dvorim, and then there are two other cases which are not related altogether to anything of commerce, which is simply causing anguish to other people, like reminding them of their past, which you shouldn't do. So the question is, mainly if you're talking about the first case, Bekamel Chefet Zevu, Eidoroi Telekach, if you ask about the price when you do not intend to buy it, which has some resemblance to commerce, still we understand the keshem, the comparison between Oinoas Momoin to Oinoas Dvorim. But if you talk about the two other cases, altogether we failed to understand what it is all about. The Gemara has a whole arichis now, but the Gemara is learning the is of Oinoas Dvorim from the same psukim, from similar psukim that we learn Oinoas Momoin. Both are in the end of Behar. The pasuk says, one pasuk says, loisoinu ishes amisoi, the other one says, loisoinu ishes ochiv. So the Gemara says that the two psukim, one relates to Oinoas Momoin, the other one relates to Oinoas Dvorim. Now, if we are saying that Oinoas Dvorim has absolutely no connection to matters of commerce, the question is not only on the Mishnah, the shaila is on the pasuk itself. Why does the pasuk include Oinoas Dvorim, which is not at all a problem of commercial character? Why does the Torah altogether mention it in context of commercial matters? the psukim over there talk about if you bought something and you paid a particular price, we're talking about yovel, and then if you redeem it, you have to pay the appropriate value, and you shouldn't deceived the other party by not paying the proper price. Okay, that's a nice moment that we understand deception in price, but. Why does the Torah include a Noah's Dvorim, which the Mishnah here says is, for example, a case when you cause anguish to a person by reminding him about his past? Why does the Torah include it into a Noah's moment? It doesn't make any sense to us at the first glance. So I will tell you. Thank you very much. So let me tell you what one of the commentaries, one of the famous commentaries. But the Meforshe HaMikro said about this. His name was Rabshim Shreffel Hirsch. None less than him. And he explains the concept of Renor in general. And therefore, with the explanation he gives to us about Renor, generally speaking, we understand what the association between Renor's moment and Renor's voting are. He said, in one very simple sentence, Oino means that you take advantage of somebody else's weakness. A person is a weakness, and you take advantage of it. Now, that could be in different variations. One variation could be in commerce. A person doesn't know how much his merchandise is worth. Comes now the other fellow who knows that his counterpart is ignorant, takes advantage of it, charges him, either overcharges him, depends who he is, you know, if he is the seller and he sees that the buyer is ignorant, so then he takes advantage of this shortcoming of the buyer and overcharges him. It's the other way around. If the buyer knows that the seller doesn't know the value of the merchandise he's selling, so then he takes advantage of the ignorance of the seller and doesn't pay him the equivalent, the real value of that merchandise. So this is called taking advantage of somebody else's weakness. Now, what happens if you go to a person and tell him, you are Baal Tshuva, you have a bad past? The person is defenseless. What can he do? I mean, it's true. It happens to be true. So you take advantage of his weakness, that where he cannot defend himself, and you exploit it. You exploit it maybe to cause him anguish, or maybe for no reason even, but you exploit his weakness. Therefore, the Mishnah says, Kishem sho'eino b'mekach omen kakach eino b'dvorim. Meaning, the same concept that you do find by Mekech or Memke, that you are not permitted to take advantage of somebody else's ignorance, similarly, you are not permitted to take advantage of somebody else's weakness in other areas, although the situation is totally different, because in the first case, we're talking about commerce. No, I'll be Mekech or Memke. In the second case, we're not talking about commerce altogether, we're talking about disadvantage in social terms or other situations, nevertheless, it is one and the same principle. You're taking advantage of somebody else's weakness. Now, there is, however, a question. If I take advantage of somebody else's ignorance in commerce, he doesn't know how much it's worth, and therefore I charge him, overcharge him, or undercharge him, as you say, right? So then, you really deceive him. There's a concept of deception. There's an element of deception. What happens, however, if you tell the fellow, you know you, I know you, you are a person with a very, very terrible past. Did you deceive him? You didn't deceive him. You insulted him. You took advantage of his weaknesses, but you didn't deceive him. In fact, once a good friend of mine told me, do you know what the Hagdorah, the right definition of a Noah's Dvorim is? The right Hagdor for Noah's Dvorim means to tell somebody else the truth into his face. People don't like if you tell the truth into their face. So therefore, if you do that, and in particular, if he cannot defend himself with being told the truth into his face, that's a Noah's Dvorim. That's exactly what it is. Now, the Ami Foshim, and I don't want to go in length about it because I want to come to the Halach L'maisa Chedek of it, who say that, yes, we're talking about the case here. That situation of telling a person off about his past and so on and so forth was done in a disguise of meaning the betterment of that person. For example, you're telling somebody who had a weak past, had maybe a little bit of not such a strong character, and you tell him, let me educate you, let me advise you, be careful about this, be careful about that. And you know why you should be careful about it? Because in your past you did this and that, and you know that certain qualities in within yourself are not completely perfect, and therefore you should be very, very careful. You give the impression to this fellow that you've been his betterment, when in fact what you really do want to do is show that you're superior and you're really able to get to him and to afflict him. That's when he said in the Torah, you have to be careful what you mean. Because the aim is, if you want to educate him, if you mean it for the betterment of the person, you are permitted to do so. If you don't, then it's a no aslo. In other words, then we have the keshem she'enu b'mekech omenkeh, kach'enu b'dvorim, both being in a fashion of deception. When you present yourself to be in one way, when in fact it's in a different way. Like b'mekech omenkeh, you deceive him in monetary terms. Here, in commerce, here, you deceive him in the impression that you give him what you really mean to do. That's what it is. Right? But this is a machloikis, because b'emes, it's not so simple that this is the case. It might very well be that the halacha would be that a nozvorm is no situation, like I told you. Telling a person off and being mitzayer him, just afflicts him, this itself is enough of Isser to consider it a nozvorm. Now, let's talk about the commercial chelik that is presented by us in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, lo yoyma le bekama chefet zevu eni roi tzelekach. He doesn't want to buy it, nevertheless he asks him how much is it worth. But what is the motivation of the person to inquire about the value of this merchandise? Well, we could have here different scenarios. One might be, simple scenario might be, I'm in the same line. I want to inquire how much is it worth, and be in competition with that particular person even. And therefore, I'm asking you, how much do you usually charge for that merchandise, so that you should be able to figure out how much to offer other people, or how much to charge other people, and you be in competition with him. So certainly you exploit him in a tremendous way. After all, he is inviting his own competition. That might be one reason for that. Another reason might be that you want to cause him to lower the price. In other words, if you ask a person, tell me, how much do you want to sell this house? $500,000. $500,000 for this house? Are you crazy? What are you talking about? This is not even $350,000. Now, you know very well that $500,000 is not a bad price for it, but nevertheless, you want to give him an impression that he would never get $500,000 for this house. So therefore, you start to negotiate with him in a fashion which is improper, giving him an impression that nobody would buy it. For that man, it might be that you send a friend of yours and you tell him, call up this fellow who wants to sell the house and offer him a price which is less than market value. And you have a different friend to do the same. So you're going to send over a few people who will give the erroneous impression to this owner of the house that the house is really worth less than in all actuality it is worth. So those might be reasons why the person might ask for that. And in fact, in the Rishonim, you have this kind of scenarios mentioned. The Meiri says that it might be that if you ask him, how much is it worth? How much do you want to charge for that? And then eventually you walk away and don't buy it. The seller is left with the erroneous impression that the reason why you left and you didn't buy it wasn't because you did not intend originally to buy it. He thinks that you really wanted to buy it, but hearing that the price is such a high price, so therefore the seller is under the erroneous impression that he is asking too much for that merchandise, which is not true. You never intended to buy it even for the right price, and therefore you were goyrim, you caused him hefset, because you caused him to sell it eventually for a lesser price. That's actually one of the explanations of the Rishonim. But it might be something else. And this is the simple explanation of what we learned in the Mishnah, and which will be supported from what we see in the Gemara. And this is, if I walk into a store and I ask, how much is it worth? The seller tells me, this is the price for that. So he's already anticipating that you will buy it. Now that you walk away, he is in anguish that you didn't buy it. the anticipation and then the letdown of it, this is the tzar that you have here. So we are not talking about causing a person commercial monetary deficit, but we're talking about causing a person anguish. In other words, it's not different in the sense, in that sense, from the other enormous dvorim which is mentioned in the Mishnah, like telling a person about his terrible past, also he, which causes anguish to the person. Also here, you are causing anguish to the person, not monetary loss, but anguish to the person, only in a setting of commerce. This would be the simple explanation. If you look in the Gemara later on, the Gemara brings here a braise, a machloket between Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, where it says, "Im hoyu chamrim mevakshim tvur mimen." If people walk over to this fellow under the understanding that he might trade with tvur, lo yom alohem, I don't trade in that. Luchay kaploni shum moichet tvur. There's somebody else who trades with that. But he knows that he sends him to somebody who doesn't have this merchandise, and he just fools them. Now he's fooling here two people. First of all, he's fooling the people who want to buy, the buyers, because they will have now an unnecessary disappointment by somebody else. And in particular, the seller also will be in anguish because he thought that he would have maybe here people who would buy some kind of merchandise, which he doesn't carry at this point. Now, this is Tanna Kamis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af lo yitlo einu v'la meker b'shor she'ein lo idomi. Now, here Rabbi Yehuda says, the person, lo yitlo einu v'la meker, he should not give an impression he would like to have the meker at the time when he does not have money. The question, shari adomo mosu lelef, because this is something which depends on how a person approaches it. V'kol domar mosu lelef, nemo b'viresu melekecho. Now, what does it mean here? It's a dovah mosu lelev. It's something which we do not really know what you have in your heart here about it. What does that mean? It means because the other person who you negotiate with does not know that you don't intend to buy it. So therefore, you're causing anguish. So what does dovah mosu lelev? Because he does not know what you really are out for. So what's the dovah mosu lelev here? What's the prohibition? The prohibition is because, after all, the pasuk says that if you give an impression to somebody else where he's not able to detect that you are causing him anguish, that's a prohibition. If he would have known that you don't really mean to buy it, he wouldn't have an anguish. Let's play around. Kilu via buyer and seller. But he doesn't know that. So therefore, this is called Dovah HaMosolelev. So what's the prohibition according to Rabbi Yehuda? That you give him an impression that you want to buy it, you don't intend to buy it. And why do you do that? So again, here we have again this whole different explanation. It might very well be that the reason why I come over and start to offer him a price is because I don't have enough money to buy it, therefore I offer him much less money than it's really worth, and in giving him an impression that it's not worth that amount of money, and that we are saying is not the correct thing to do. Now this would be a tremendous hit. Let's say, for argument's sake, there's a house which goes for $500,000. I only have $400,000. $500,000, I do very well know, is market value. But I want to get him down. And therefore, I try my luck, and I offer him $300,000. And I hope that maybe we will settle for $400,000. So, the asking price, which reflects the real and true value of the market, I do not have, never had, and wouldn't able to come up with. I try to offer much lower price in order to eventually settle with some kind of price that I'm able to match. That should be prohibited. Why should that be prohibited? Why should that be prohibited? If I would have told him, if I buyer tell the seller $500,000, it isn't worth $500,000. It's not true. You're cheating people with asking so much money. Then I still maybe could understand this could be considered a deception in this rather way. Even then, I'm not so sure this is deception. Let the seller inquire in the market if this is really true market value, what he's asking for, and make his own judgment. But even if this would have been the case, the Brice doesn't talk about the case, Bedavke, of such a situation when I tell him right out, this is not the value. I'm just offering him. I'm offering him, telling him, I'm toile einu ala mekach, and I'm telling him, I am willing to pay $300,000. Take it or leave it. I'm strong, very, very strong terms, good negotiators. So if he settled on $400,000, giving an impression to the seller that he was lucky to get $400,000, when in fact he could have gotten $500,000, that should be prohibited. So therefore there are those who say, and this is based on the Gemara, and if you look here on the side here, there is the Maseret HaShas or somebody, Psochim Kivyud Beis Omed Beis. There's a Gemara in Psochim over there, but the Gemara says that one of the three things Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi was told before he was Nifter, one of the three things were something similar to this. Lo Yit Le'enev Alamekach. Lo Yit Le'enev Alamekach. And over there it seems to be it was a Midas Chasidus. Not something which we are obligated Mitzad Adin not to do. We are talking about something which Mitzad Midas Chasidus a person should be careful about. Oh, then that's something else. If this whole Gemara here is only a Midas Chasidus, then we're talking about a different situation. In other words, if the seller would be able to get $500,000 for that merchandise, and you're using regular techniques, no problems. Regular buyers and seller techniques whereby you get him down to a price which is below market value, and it's not in a situation where you're over and over, for whatever reason. Then, in this particular situation, you were not over mitzat ikar in any prohibition of a noah's dvorim per se. Although, at the end of the day, with your tactics, you caused him less of profit, but being that you did not deceive him in any vain fashion, you're not over mitzat ikar in any kind of issa. Nevertheless, the Torah says, mitzat midas chasidus you should be careful about. Although the Gemara is not much like this here, because the Gemara here seems to indicate that we're talking about within the parameters of Oinuas Dvorim per se. But if you say that those two Gemaras are analogous, and that the Gemara in Psochim, the Gemara here, are one and the same, then this is not really what it would mean. From the Marsho and from the Malbim, it seems to be, over there, it seems to be that they learned that two Gemaras are two different Gemaras. Meaning the Gemara in Psochim, the Gemara in Bov Mitzia are two different Gemaras. The Gemara in Psochim is Midas Chasidus. In the situation like I told you, which means that I did not use any incorrect techniques to lower the person in what he could get as a return for this merchandise. I did not send other people to try to convince to sell for less. I didn't put any incorrect pressure, anything of that sort. At the end of the day, he will not resist, and he will sell it to me for less than the price. We shouldn't do that. You should not have caused in any vain fashion that the seller should get less of return than he could for this merchandise. That is a Midas Chasidus. However, if you apply undue pressure, like sending other people that they should offer less than the real market price, or in the techniques that you use while negotiating with him, you give him an impression that he will never get that price and therefore he's willing to sell it for less, and so on and so forth, this kind of techniques, then you are over, this is the Gemara of Mitzvah, right? So therefore a person according to this has to be careful in the way how he's dealing in his ways of commerce. As long as he deals in an accepted technique of negotiations, he could do that. But once he applies pressure, which is undue, which Halacha calls undue, which also civility would call undue, he cannot do it. There's something very interesting in Halacha, which is a whole talk about it. What happens in a situation when you have somebody who wants to sell merchandise? You're talking now reverse situation. Somebody wants to sell merchandise. Comes a buyer and says, I'm willing to pay, let's say, for this load, I'm willing to pay $1,000. Whatever merchandise it might be. Says the seller, $1,000. There were people already who were willing to pay for that. $1,500. They didn't accept the offer. You're telling me $1,000? No way. The truth of the matter is, it never happened. He never had an offer for $1,500, but he sees that the person to give this offer is somebody who becomes easily intimidated. At the end, maybe even he sells him for $1,000, but that $1,000 that he sold him, and that's is not really the price that the buyer could have gotten it for. In other words, he could have gotten him for less money. He was only impressed by what the seller told him, that he already had an offer for $1,500. And later on, it turns out that lo yudubim v'lo yayin never happened. There's a famous to resolve. The to resolve writes that Masim Becholiyom happens every day, that people talk this way. And no, we never heard that therefore you cancel a deal because of that. In context, for example, in Schiros Poyalim, you have it also. You know, somebody comes over and says, I'm willing to do this job for you. Says the employer, well, how much do you want me to pay you? No, how much do you offer? Says, well, I'm willing to pay you for painting this house $20,000. $20,000! This kind of house I was already paid $25,000, $30,000. You coming with such an offer, ridiculous. Oh, so finally says, okay, $22,000. Okay. He never had an offer, meaning the employee was never offered $25,000, $30,000 for this. Bobby Meister, never happened. Nevertheless, we do find this almost mechuch from the Sugis and the Gemos and Bobby Mitzir. In this case, he cannot claim mekachtos. Just I want to tell you for your information. Yes, if the employee would tell the employee, you should know, I'm giving you $20,000, $22,000, but it's only because you were offered by others $25,000 or $30,000. For clearly, he depended the offer of $22,000 on the fact, on the erroneous fact, what he thought is a fact, right, of $25,000 or $30,000. In that particular case, certainly being he was totally one or the other, he was depending the price of $22,000 on his erroneous impression of another offer of $25,000 or $30,000. So then in this case, the whole thing is bottled. But otherwise, no, that's the way our people talk. Now, so with another words, what we have to differentiate is as follows. What the Gemara teaches us is the proper way and manner how to deal in business, to be honest, straightforward, and not to use improper techniques of negotiations. But let's not forget the other side of the coin, and this is that if people do engage in this kind of behavior, it does not necessarily invalidate the deal. In other words, a person should not be on the front line if he cannot take the heat. You are not supposed to be in business if you don't know that people do use this kind of techniques. On one hand, you should be tomim, but only im Hashem alakecho, not with other people, because then you will be in trouble. So therefore, you should handle matters like a tomim im Hashem alakecho. On the other hand, not expect everybody to be in the same mode of behavior, and therefore not to later on blame all the world for being immoral. After all, the consequences have a lot to do with the mode of behavior of generally how people behave. Thank you very much.
Okay.